Welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show here on your home for Sporting Kansas City Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am your host, Nate Bucati, joined by El Jefe, Carter Augustine, on the phone this time. Look, there's a lot going on this week. Carter's been doing stuff out at Children's Mercy Park, getting ready for the big game on Saturday against Montreal. So we're on the phone this time, Carter, but you and I were on the call of Sporting's dominant win over the Minnesota United over the weekend here on the radio on 810, as it was a national TV game. And I'm imagining that things still feel pretty good out there at Children's Mercy Park right now with the way this team is performing in their home field.
Yeah, I'm looking down at the field right now, actually, Nate. I think they just got another shot away in Kansas City. So, I think they'll be looking to keep that good vibe going. I mean, gosh, they just keep running out 3-0 winners here at Children's Mercy Park. It's pretty unbelievable. And I shouldn't say unbelievable, because this team, they look very good, especially at home. And again, like you said, they were really good against Minnesota this past weekend.
And if anything, you know, I got the sense that there was some disappointment from Peter Vermes after the game. He felt the team should have had more.
I would tend to agree with him. They again get a nice goal just before halftime to kind of calm the nerves. This time Michael Parra steps up, and not quite sure what Bobby Shuttleworth was doing. I don't know. Maybe he was waiting for the deflection that never came, but he was rooted to the spot, as you said, on the goal call. And it's a huge goal, because up until then, Sporting had a lot of dominance. We're getting a lot of shots away, but just couldn't find the mark. So I would agree. They played so well that I think 3-0 really almost flatters Minnesota United after that game.
Well, Sporting Kansas City, we've talked a lot about it, are on the best run of form at home that they've ever had. 16 games in a row without a loss. They've won 6 games in a row, which I think really is almost more impressive, because, look, teams come to Children's Mercy Park looking for a draw a lot of the time. So if you can crack through and not only, you know, refuse to lose, but get those victories on a consistent basis, that's what's put Sporting Kansas City atop the Western Conference right now. But I do find it interesting, Carter, that Matt Doyle of MLSsoccer.com penned a piece over the weekend about this growing trend that the home sides are becoming more and more dominant in MLS, even than what we've seen in the past. And I know this is something we talked about last year, and the trend has even grown since last year. Teams are cleaning up at home, and they're not losing games. I'm curious if you have any theories as to why home field advantage has become so significant in the league lately.
Yeah, I read the article too. It's a really good one. If anyone wants to check it out, it's worth their time. Because you're right, it seems like it's always difficult to travel in this league. Such a huge country. A lot of foreigners that come into the league aren't quite used to the travel. So there's always been that stigma, or at least, you know, the trend of home teams getting points. But it has grown. I don't know about you, but it seems this year that there's more teams that are willing to rest guys on the road. It seems like almost an NBA approach to me. I don't know about you.
I definitely think that's part of it, and I don't study all of the other teams that closely to be able to tell you exactly that, you know, at what rate that's happening. But I know just from looking at what's happened with Sporting Kansas City and some of the games that we've watched that in teams that have come to Children's Mercy Park, whether it's by necessity having to rest people, whether it's what Minnesota United were dealing with this past weekend, which was a couple of injuries, a suspension, international duty. Whether it's what Sporting Kansas City have dealt with, and I think this is a major part of it so far, has been this glut of midweek games, where I think that it's only reasonable if you're a manager of an MLS team, you're going on the road on a Wednesday, you're going to sit some of your guys. It's a long season. There's a lot of travel. You got to make sure that everybody can make it through the season, because it's not about who's at the top of the table a third of the way through the season, as we've talked about many times before. So I do think that has led to some of the resting of players as well. And I think while the depth of the rosters has gotten a lot better, I think that Matt Doyle makes a really interesting point now. It almost makes when you rest some of your players now even more drastic than in the past, because in the past it was, you know, two or three guys at the top of your roster, and then a big drop-off to everyone else. Now it's seven, eight, nine guys, and then a big drop-off. So if you're looking at a starting 11 that's pretty even on the playing field surface, but then there's a big drop-off after that, resting two or three guys makes a huge difference for a lot of these teams right now.
Yeah, it certainly does, and it does speak to the depth of some teams because I agree with you. It is more about the midweek. It's not that teams are just looking to rest guys on the road after a full week, but with all these midweek games, you look at your schedule and you go, hey, well, you know, if we can average 2 points a game at home, which is an excellent mark to strive to, that's 34 points right there off your 17 home games, and then you just need a handful from your road games, and that'll get you into the playoffs. So I think coaches are looking at these games, and when the midweek games start to pile up, you know, you think about maybe I can throw out some guys and get a draw on the road like FC Dallas did so well early on in the season here, playing a bunch of backups and eking out a 0-0 draw, and it's an excellent result. And then you try to win your home games, and that'll put you in pole position for sure.
And Sporting Kansas City have had a couple of results like that in terms of going to Portland and then getting that 0-0 draw, which I think is maybe a result we forget too much about, in Toronto. At a place
that's
very difficult to play. So we'll see how it goes from here. Now, just because you've won all your games at home or won six in a row at home doesn't mean that it's a foregone conclusion. It'll happen the next time. I think this is a relatively dangerous Montreal team coming to town. Now, they're going to be without seven guys, and five of them people who started in their last game because of international duty. We know Sporting Kansas City will be without a handful of players, Roger Espinoza, Matt Beisler, and Graham Zusi, maybe at the top of the list. Those are some pretty big names. This is one of those kind of wild card games to me that it's going to be very interesting to see the way that those absences affect both of these teams.
I like wild card. That's a good I think that's a good term for it, because with these weird international breaks that MLS sometimes will play through, some teams will have buys through, you know, and they just kind of pop up at random spots all over the place. You do get some teams get punished for having international players on their roster, and it appears Montreal is going to be one of them. I agree with you that this could be a trap game just because they've been good since Jamali came into the team, the Swiss international, but then on the other hand, he won't be playing. So that's a big loss for him. They're still dangerous, but they've been playing a lot better since he came into the team. I'm excited again to see Nacho Piatti. He's a fantastic player, but I think for Montreal, they just have so many absences. Like you mentioned, seven. It's going to be tough for them to come here on the road, and you know, coming down south, it's going to be a tough one for them.
Well, first of all, the nickname Nacho for the name Ignacio still is to this day the greatest natural nickname that that comes from any full name.
Oh, just it's wonderful. Yeah, I first of all, Ignacio is a sweet name too.
Yes.
So I feel bad for shortening it, but then the alternative is Nacho, and it just fits.
And as a broadcaster, you get to use different awesome names for him as you describe him through the course of the match.
How many Nacho Libre references will you be making this weekend?
Can't disclose that. Those things all have to be held close to the vest before you know, before the game. We don't want to spoil anything, but I will say that's a challenge. We think, I guess, do we think that, you know, Amir Jidic is probably going to be the guy that does make his MLS debut this time around for Matt Beisler? We're going to talk with Eric Palmer Brown a little bit later in the show today and find out how he is. But he didn't get into town until about midnight last night. He hasn't trained with Sporting Kansas City in over a month. At least Amir Jidic has had a chance to train with this team for the last week and a half. And plus, he doesn't have all the miles on his legs and literally flying through the air that Eric Palmer Brown's trying to recover from right now. But while we're all excited about seeing Amir Jidic play, we liked what we saw from him with Swope Park Rangers and in his limited time in CONCACAF Champions League play last year. That's a guy that, not that they'll be matched up against each other a ton, but he's going to have his eyes out for Piatti through the course of this game. That's going to be a tough challenge for a young man.
That's going to be a real tough challenge to try and match up with that guy. And if it is indeed Amir Jidic's first appearance, or at least first start in MLS play, I would agree with you just in terms of the circumstances for EPB coming back. I can't imagine he would slot right in. Maybe, you know, maybe fully rested, doesn't have much jet lag, and gets a couple good days of training in. But I would expect to see Gidic out there, and it will be quite the test. And, of course, he's not the only guy you got to look out for as well. Mm-hmm. They got some speedy players up top, Montreal. So I think it will be a test, and we'll have to see how Gidic and Opara work together. They're kind of similar players from what I can tell. And the reason I think Beisler and Opara work so well together is they complement each other so well. So we'll have to see. Gidic, he can play with the ball on the deck. So we'll have to see how he does it when he comes in.
Well, it's going to be an interesting week coming up. By the way, coming up on the show, we're going to talk about the U-20s, the men's national team, and MLS with Will Parchman. We are going to talk with Eric Palmer Brown about his trip to the U-20 World Cup as well. And Carter, I know you'll be busy on Sunday with the Caldwell Park Rangers against Tulsa Roughnecks FC. And, of course, we'll be out there Saturday night. And, by the way, I know something you're extremely passionate about, men's national team qualifiers, big ones, Trinidad and Tobago in Colorado on Thursday, and then against Mexico at the Azteca on Sunday. Give me your prediction. How many points does the United States or do the United States come away with out of these two big qualifiers?
I'd like to say four, but I gotta call it like I see it. I think it's gonna be three. I don't know about you, but they have to win on Thursday. They have to beat Trinidad and Tobago. That is a must-win game. And then you move on to Mexico. This Mexico team is so good, and at home at the Azteca, U.S. is historically, you know, not done too well there, and a tough place to play for anyone. I do like how they're training at altitude all this week and playing in Colorado to try and acclimate themselves to the Mexico City altitude, but I can't see them going there and getting a point.
I can see it. I won't predict it. I'm with you. I think they'll come away with three points,
yeah, but
I think that'll be enough. You know, but it would be a great bonus if they can come up with a result in Mexico as well. El Jefe, thanks for the time. We appreciate it, and we will see you Thursday night. We're gonna have a little bit of fun on Thursday night, and then on Saturday at Children's Mercy Park.
Heck yeah, man. Looking forward to it. Like I said, Piatti, one of my favorite players to watch in this league, so I'm really looking forward to this game this weekend.
Should be a lot of fun, and you can get your tickets at sportingkc.com. There are still tickets available. Big match for Sporting Kansas City against the Montreal Impact. Back after this with Will Parchman on the Sporting Kansas City Show. And the Sporting Kansas City Show continues here on your home for Sporting Kansas City, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We are very excited to talk about a myriad of things. This is a busy time right now in the American world of soccer, as we are joined now by Will Parchman. You can follow him on Twitter, and I suggest that you do if you don't already, at Will Parchman, WILLPARCHMAN. You can read his stuff at Top Drawer Soccer, at MLS, and other places as well. I don't know if I covered it all there, Will, but thanks a lot for joining us. We appreciate the time.
I think you got it. I appreciate you having me.
So obviously, there's a lot to get to, as I said, and you're a guy that's really done a great job breaking down a lot of these different things that are happening. We've got stuff at the U-20s, we've got stuff at the men's national team level, and then I'd like to talk some MLS with you as well. But I guess we'll go chronologically, at least from the age standpoint, and we'll start with the U-20s. I find myself, even though the result against Venezuela was a disappointing one, I thought that Venezuela team was really good, and I thought the team overall, I don't know, I just find myself very excited about what we saw from the U-20s. How should I feel coming away from this this competition?
Well, I think excitement is warranted. I don't really see a need to be overly cynical about this cycle and this tournament in general. I mean, if you kind of look back at, you know, the previous two cycles under Tab Ramos, I mean, both of them were good, but they weren't this good. I think he finally got his team. He got sort of his tactical setup that he really wanted, you know, just with the two sort of hounding central midfielders and Eric Williamson and Tyler Adams and, you know, the speed on the flanks. He had the ability to hit really fast on counters and get quick turnovers and sort of feed the break, and that's really what he wants to do as a coach. So, but more than that, I mean, I think we look at results too closely on youth levels. I mean, certainly you want to win because you want to progress deep in these tournaments, not necessarily for the hardware, although that's nice. It's more for the experience. I mean, you want these kids to have sort of these high-pressure knockout round experiences. And to do that, I mean, obviously you have to keep winning. But that said, they had those experiences. You know, they had a blowout win in a knockout stage. You know, certainly the Venezuela game didn't go, you know, like you would have wanted, but they did pull a goal back late. You know, they showed some good verve late in that game, despite the fact that it wasn't really going their way. So this cycle has really been, you know, one of the deepest that we've ever seen on the U-20 level. I'm not sure how good it is at the top in terms of stacking it up with the likes of, you know, Jozy Altidore's cycle and Michael Bradley's cycle. We won't know that for another couple of years, but at least for now, we can definitely say that this cycle, at least on the surface from what we've seen, has been a success.
When you talk about experience, I guess that's the part that encouraged me the most as I was settling in to watch some of these games at the World Cup, the U-20 World Cup. I'm going up and down the roster, and as a guy who's doing play-by-play for Sporting Kansas City, I see, like you said, Tyler Adams. Well, I've already broadcast a game that he played in MLS. I see a handful of guys from RSL that we've seen play at the MLS level. All of a sudden, I'm looking all over the roster, and I recognize all these names because these guys are pros. And they're not just pros, but they're pros who are playing significant minutes. And that's not to mention the guys like Christian Pulisic who would qualify for the U-20s but aren't even there. And you are better at the history than I am. I feel like that's a relatively new phenomenon. I feel like it wasn't that long ago that we'd be talking about a lot of amateurs and college kids. Am I wrong about that?
No, not at all. And the shift has really come in the last two or three cycles. I mean, I did a study on this a couple years ago. I'm not sure exactly what it was this cycle, but it was low. But the number of college kids over the last maybe 15 to 20 years has dropped precipitously. I mean, we're talking about, you know, you used to see double-digit kids in college, and now that number is consistently 2, 3, 4. And, you know, most of the time, the majority of those are the keepers, because college actually is a pretty good route still for goalkeepers because they you know, bloom a little bit later. But yeah, I mean, the college numbers are definitely down. You're seeing more kids, even if they're not playing on first teams. They're in the USL. You know, even some of them are in NASL. Or playing abroad. And even if you're in an academy as a 19-year-old, as an 18-year-old, and maybe even if you're not getting those first team minutes, you're training with the first team. You're seeing how first teamers eat, you know, how they deal with pressure, how they train. And so that's not something that was all that common in American soccer before, you know, 2011, 2013, when things really started to shift. And the majority of that, I think, is the development academy, which is, it's only 10 years old, but I think we're already starting to see it sort of churn out quality players.
Yeah, how much, I mean, does MLS deserve a ton of credit for this? I mean, the fact that they are starting to develop their own players?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the next step is always playing them more, and I think mm-hmm. there are a lot of teams that still have a lot of things to learn in that respect. I mean, I think a lot still sort of lean back on maybe veteran guys who are maybe a little bit past their prime, instead of handing experience over to, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds. But I think that's starting to change. You're starting to see a lot of younger, more enthusiastic coaches who are, you know, sort of grew up either as assistants or, you know, as college coaches or whatever around this development academy environment. So it's not strange to them. It seems normal. Or you just have guys who are, you know, sort of ideologues, like Oscar Perea in Dallas is a great example, but Jesse Marsh with the New York Red Bulls. I mean, a lot of these coaches are just really wedded to this idea of using their pipelines, and it's cost effective. I mean, the owners love it too, because, you know, you can bring along these local guys, and, you know, that you're not dishing out huge designated player salaries. So, I mean, I think it's a great idea, and I do think we're starting to see more and more coaches and administrators sort of really, you know, like the idea.
Well, one of the guys, and obviously Peter Vermees has talked a lot about the necessity, not just the importance, but the necessity of Sporting Kansas City to start producing their own talent in the same way. And obviously one of those guys is Eric Palmer Brown, who we haven't had a chance to yet see him play in a Sporting uniform this year.
largely because he's spent so much time with the U-20s, but also because Ike Opara and Matt Beisler have played so well. But he wore the captain's band down in Korea, and he obviously won the golden ball in the qualifying process. Give me your unbiased evaluation of Eric Palmer Brown and how he showed himself at the U-20 World Cup.
Well, I think when the World Cup started, I think most of us sort of expected the U.S.'s best defender to be Cameron Carter-Vick, bottom Hotspur defender who's played up. He was when he was at U-17 age level, he was playing up U-23s. If that tells you how physically ready he was for the next level. So a lot of us sort of defense, but it really was Eric Palmer Brown's show. He was by and large the best defender the U.S. had over the course of the tournament. And I do think that some of us criticized Tab Ramos for playing Eric Palmer Brown at the six, at the defensive midfield position in qualifying, which he did throughout qualifying. But I really do think it helped him sort of become more spatially aware, be better organized as he's tracking runners. Because if there was a knock on him, in his younger years, I feel like it's been he can get a little bit lost in space. But he's gotten so much better in that area, and I do think the fact that he has played in space a little bit more at that sixth position sort of really helped him solidify that. So when he moved back to center back, which where I think he should be, he just looked so much better, so much more assured. And then, of course, always, he's great in the air. He's great on the tackle. He's just sort of a rock in the box. So I think that, he really came into his own in this tournament. As you mentioned, that the center back position in at SKC is just so good right now. So it's going to be really, really difficult for him to break in. But, there are a lot of games on the schedule, so I would not be at all surprised to see him, nick a couple minutes here in the next month or two.
This is without me talking to anybody on the staff at Sporting about it yet, but I certainly have that U.S. Open Cup game coming up next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, circled as maybe the chance we get to finally see him play. He'll have had some time back with the team and training and all that by then, but we'll see. Once again, we're visiting with Will Parchman. So final question on the U-20s before we move on to the next topic is, can you name a couple of guys? Is there anybody that you look at and say, this guy is just about ready for the men's national team? I mean, is there anybody close enough that we might be seeing playing for Bruce Arena anytime in the relatively near future?
Well, I think, as I mentioned, Cameron Carter-Vickers was the name a lot of people were talking about before this tournament. He's actually been on an 18-man roster before. He was actually on that team that Jurgen Klinsmann's last team that went down and got drubbed by Costa Rica last year. But, for me, in terms of the way his skill set, sort of translates as he is, I think Tyler Adams in the next, it probably won't be before the 2018 World Cup, but certainly directly after it, I think he is ready to go. He's tireless. I've compared him to N'Golo Kanté, the Chelsea midfielder. I know that's a bit of a stretch.
Wow.
maybe the best player in England right now. Yeah. But in terms of skill sets, I think that they're very similar, saying nothing about the actual skill level. He just covers so much ground. He goes in hard. He's a great tackler. But he's got great vision. I think that's what's really developed in him since USL last year to this year. I think he's just really gotten so much better in the attacking half. So, he's going to get way more minutes, for the Red Bulls. Jesse Marsh loves him, just like Tab Ramos did. So I think as I look at his skill set, he's just, I think he's going to be ready pretty quick.
I lied to you. One more question about the U-20s, because everybody's talking about Josh Sargent after his showing, clearly. And Sporting Kansas City have the homegrown claim on him, but there's all these reports that he's going to go to Germany. What's next for him?
Yeah, I think it'll be Germany. I think Germany makes a lot of sense for him. I think he wants to go abroad, and he's gotten a ton of interest. He visited over there during their winter break. He visited, I think, Werder Bremen. He visited Boca, where there are already a couple Americans there. Playing, and then he visited PSV Eindhoven in Holland, and then a couple others. So there's quite a bit of interest, and people forget he was a 17 qualifying team like 2 weeks before he went to the U-20 World Cup. He scored five goals in six games there. And then he scores four goals in the U-20 World Cup. So I think that sort of showing is only going to make his interest higher abroad. And I think it may be a little bit premature to start talking national team stuff. You know, he's only 17, but he should get in with a pro club pretty much, you know, wherever he wants within the next 6 months to a year.
Okay, now let's move on to the men's national team. They take on Trinidad and Tobago on Thursday at 7 o'clock. Then, of course, the big trip down to the Azteca on Sunday evening as well. After this 1-1 draw against Venezuela, look, it's a friendly. A lot of people played in the game. They're getting, acclimatized, I guess, to the high altitude. What do we take away, if anything, from that Venezuela game? And do we expect anything other than a fairly dominant performance against Trinidad and Tobago?
Yeah, I think for me the biggest takeaway was that you really do need somebody directly ahead of Michael Bradley playing a sort of shuttler box-to-box role. It's not something they really had initially in that game, and they really looked sort of overmatched in the middle. They weren't really threading together passes, didn't look very coherent in the build-up. And I think, it's good that Michael Bradley's fallen back into the number six role a little bit under Bruce Arena. I think that's where he wants to be, and he got forced way too high up the field under Jurgen Klinsmann on average, but you really do need somebody directly above him playing as a sort of linking role. And, as I looked at this roster, I thought, wow, Kellen Acosta looks like the perfect player for that role. I think you can probably put Alejandro Bedoya in that role too if you want a little bit more veteran know-how, but I think this is the perfect game to stick Kellen Acosta into that role, see how he does. He's on ripping form for FC Dallas right now. And, if you have him a little bit higher than Bradley, sort of connecting the dots between the attack, I think, Trinidad and Tobago is the perfect, place to do it, because then you've got the Azteca, Mexico on the other side of it. And if Acosta performs well there, it's basically, that's his issue point.
Yeah, I am on your side when it comes to more Kellen Acosta, and I think I'm ready to start watching the Tyler Adams Kellen Acosta partnership in the midfield. Let's get ready for Qatar. And I know you got to qualify for the World Cup this time around first before you worry about setting up the team that can maybe make a real deep run at some point for this World Cup team. But that does beg the question: then where do you stick Christian Pulisic? He's the best player on the team. I think they've got to put him in the spot where he makes the biggest difference for the team. Where is that?
It's in the middle. It's as a number 10. I mean, that's how he came up. I mean, he was a number 10. We go all the way back to PA Classics when he was playing in the Development Academy. That's how he played with the U-17 national team when they had their, a really successful 2013-15 cycle. And it was only, when he moved to Borussia Dortmund that he sort of, flipped outside, because they really need, when you're a 17-year-old kid, you're not going to sort of get your position of choice on a team with Marco Reus and Shinji Kagawa and whatever else. But he is a number 10. I mean, he wants to pull the strings. He wants to make the killer passes. And that's where he's going to do the most good. And so I think, as crazy as it sounds, and Bruce Arena's not going to want to do it because he's sort of a veteran coach and he likes veteran players, but I think you've got to move guys around to, fit the 18-year-old. And so I think what that means is maybe you play a 4-2-3-1. You've got Kellen Acosta sort of as the higher midfielder between him and Michael Bradley, and you stick Pulisic in the middle. You put Nagby and facing Johnson on either side of him and see how it does. You'd have to make some tough. In that case, you probably have to sit, maybe put him off the bench. But for my money, Christian Pulisic's the best player on this roster. And I know that's going to sound a little crazy, but I'm going to stand by it.
Well, just if it makes you feel any better, I spoke with Matt Beisler about him during the last cycle that the national team was together, and I asked him to calm down my enthusiasm and excitement over Pulisic, and he said he's our best player and it's not close. So that didn't calm me down at all. that if anything, and Beisler's not one for hyperbole. You're right on point there. Okay, last question about the men's national team. What about this 40-man roster? Anything that surprised you, either in a positive or maybe disappointing way, in terms of what Bruce Arena is calling in for the 40-man for the Gold Cup?
Yeah, I think Jesse Gonzalez, the goalkeeper that was added, is interesting because he just recently said that he wants to play for Mexico. So the fact that the U.S. is basically saying, hey, why don't you give us a chance, you know, keep us in your thoughts, I thought that was interesting. And, you know, we'll see what he does with that call-up. You know, I think for the most part, you know, you've got Pulisic in there. I'm not sure if he's going to accept it. But Christian Roldan, very, very deserving, finally, you know, getting his due. Some of these MLS guys, you know, Tommy McNamara, you know, CJ Sapong, you feel like some of these MLS guys are getting their due, or maybe they didn't under Klinsmann. I feel like maybe you have a little bit more of a chance to get into some of these Gold Cup, you know, friendly camp type rosters if you're having a strong run of form in MLS, whereas before it might have been tough. I mean, how often have we seen Matt Hedges, you know, in a really, you know, key spot? And I think he's deserved it for a while. I mean, Justin Morrow for Toronto FC, I mean, a lot of these guys. So I think for me, the big takeaway is that if you know, if you're an MLS guy, you're going to get more of a shot to sort of get, you know, get some meaningful playing time on the national team level.
Well, I've kept you for a long time here, so I do want to ask you at least one thing about MLS before we let you go. Look, everything I read and hear says that people right now feel like this Toronto FC team is the class of MLS so far this year. Sporting Kansas City, at least for now, sit atop the Western Conference. So maybe tell me who are the top two or three teams as you see it, and where does Sporting Kansas City stack up as you look at this year's version of our Kansas City team?
Yeah, I think Sporting KC are just so strong defensively. I mean, they just hound you, and it's so consistent from game to game that it's almost like you can pretty much set your watch by, you know, the kind of performance that you're going to get, which is, for my money, it's the most difficult thing in MLS to be consistent because, you know, especially on the road where, you know, things seem to go wrong on a weekly basis. And so I think, you know, that's where title runs are built, are on that sort of defensive bedrock. Because it's more predictable than scoring, especially in MLS. So I think Sporting KC clearly, you know, has the best defense in MLS, which goes a long way. But I think the flash of what Toronto FC brings to the table is just sort of incomparable. You know, you look at their front line; they come at you in so many different ways. You know, with their overlapping wing backs and sort of funneling possession in, you know, from the wings outside the box. So I think that sort of makes them a little bit more of a trendy pick maybe than Sporting KC, which is getting it done with a little bit more grit. But, you know, I think Houston Dynamo are really interesting. I'm not sure that they're going to be around still in October, but them and the Chicago Fire are sort of the two teams that sort of, you know, rocketed from worst up near to first. So I think those two teams in particular, in addition to the guys that we sort of knew were going to be there, are sort of the ones that I've been watching pretty closely the last couple of weeks.
Will, I kept you a long time. Like I said, I really appreciate all the time and the insight. Keep up the great work, and thanks a lot for the time tonight.
Cheers, buddy. I appreciate it.
Okay, that is Will Parchman. As I said, you can and should follow him on Twitter if you get the chance at all. It's very simple, at Will with two L's, Parchman, P-A-R-C-H-M-A-N, and read his stuff at Top Drawer Soccer and MLS.com as well. When we come back, we will be joined by U.S. Under-20 Captain Eric Palmer Brown right after this as the Sporting Kansas City Show continues on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Our thanks to Will Parchman for joining us on the Sporting Kansas City Show in the last segment as we continue now here on your home for Sporting Kansas City Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We are joined now by the man we just talked about with Will a little bit, the captain of the U-20s, who's just back from his trip to the U-20 World Cup down in Korea, or over in Korea, I guess I should say, Eric Palmer Brown. Good evening, Eric. How are you, man?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Good. Tell me, first of all, about when you got back and how you're settling in.
I got back at like 11:30 last night, I think is when we landed, and just got home around like 12:30-ish and just had a little snack and went to bed. Saw my pups, my two dogs, and they were super excited to see me home. And now I've been just running errands all day, just catching up with friends and stuff.
So what is the trip from Seoul, Korea to Kansas City like? Like, how long did it take? How many stops did you have to make? What was that like?
Yeah, it was just Seoul to L.A. was 10 hours on the way back. Is like you're flying like with the wind behind you or something like that.
Okay.
So it's quicker on the way back. And then LA to KC, so that was like 2 hours, almost 3 hours. So it was pretty short compared to the like 13, 14 hour flight over there.
So when you're the captain of the U-20s and you make this trip, do you get to sit in those fancy seats up in the front where you get to lay back and sleep, or are you stuck back like with the rest of us who have to like sit up straight and try to sleep in an uncomfortable plane chair the whole time?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're all sitting in the uncomfortable plane chairs. That's us. We're just like, I guess, in a group. So like you kind of sit by people you know, which is awesome. So you can like get into their space, kind of. So that was good to sit next to some people we knew.
Okay, on to some more important stuff, because I know that's just, hey man, that's part of your life as a soccer superstar. You're going to be traveling the world, but I like to get the perspective on just what goes into all that. Now let's talk about the actual competition. First of all, just give me your thoughts. I mean, I know you guys wanted to go even further than you did, but man, you make it through the group, you make it through a knockout round in convincing fashion, hard-fought game against Venezuela. How do you feel overall about the way you guys performed and about the experience?
Yeah, no, the experience was unbelievable. You know, being in an amazing country like South Korea, it was a beautiful country with really nice people, and they were really welcoming, and South Korea put on a great World Cup, and to be over on that side of the world is crazy. Being 14 hours ahead of like all your friends and family was different. And, you know, just to grow these bonds that, you know, we've had for 2 years, like even stronger, and this amazing competition we were in, it was an amazing feeling. And like you said, obviously we wanted to go further. I mean, Venezuela was a great team. They had a lot of opportunities. I mean, we had a couple. I had one myself in the 90th minute that could have won us the game. But I mean, like you said, it was a hard-fought game, and you know, I wouldn't have traded this experience for anything. So it was just really fun to go out there and fight with my family, and you know, get the results that we did. Unfortunate to, I wouldn't say unfortunate to lose to Venezuela, but you know, it was hard-fought game for us, and you know, with 2 days rest, I think we did, you know, the best we could.
So you just spoke very glowingly of South Korea. That's a place I've never been. Did it surprise you how much you liked it? What stood out to you the most about just the country itself?
Yeah, it surprised me. I mean, I'm never one to like. I'm a huge fan of like just America. You know, like I love our country, but I mean, what stood out was just like how nice of a city. Like, we were in Incheon, pretty much that was our home base, and we kind of just had the best city. Like, right on there's like a little lakefront where you could get on like mini paddle boats, kind of paddle around, like Segway tours, like bakeries right across the street from us to, you know, get in and just, you know, eat some, you know, sweets and stuff every once in a while. And, like, the grocery store was right next door, so we could go get, like, some candy or something. So it was just, I mean, an awesome spot to be located. So that was awesome. The people were super nice. And, you know, like I said, South Korea put on a great World Cup.
What would you say from a soccer standpoint was maybe the biggest learning experience? I mean, you've been a part of some big competitions in different parts of the world now, but what about this one? What will you take away from the U-20 World Cup to say that this, we really learned a lot in this regard?
Yeah, you know, I think what I take away from this would just be, I don't know, the experience. Like, it's something that most people never get to do. And, you know, you're with a group of guys for a certain amount of time. And, you know, like for U.S. soccer, it's like 2 years where you get to like the cycle together. You start to know people from your pool, and then, you know, you fight for each other and you go through qualifying and get to this tournament and get to the World Cup stage, where it's just, you know, you experience kind of what the first team players experience when they're at the World Cup, and to play against some of the best players under 20 in the world, and see those players on the same stage as you, and like see the, I don't know about Messis of our generations, but like those kind of players that could be the Messis or be the Ronaldos of our generation and play against them. It's really cool. Really cool experience from that aspect.
Yeah, we've asked you about some of the guys on that team before. I know last time we had you on, you talked about Tyler Adams. You told me, you know, you guys were pretty close, and he obviously is one of the guys that really impressed people at this competition, along with yourself. And another guy that we hadn't had a chance to see as much, and maybe you hadn't played with as much before this, is Josh Sargent, obviously, the youngster who, what, he scored 4 goals in this competition. Tell me about your interaction with him and what impressed you the most about him on and off the field.
You know, Josh is – I grew really close with Josh over these last four weeks or whatever, however long we were there. But, you know, what impressed me on the field is just, like, how aware he is. You know, he's really strong in his hold-up play. He's got good feet. He's really smart with his runs. And for, like, his age, you know, like I said, he's a smart kid, and he's really mature off the field. You wouldn't think he's 17 years old for how big he is and, you know, how mature he is off the field. So this guy, I mean, from Missouri, from the same state as us over here, you know, we had a lot in common. And, you know, we talked about hopefully getting a golf game in this summer or something like that. So, you know, I'm really excited to see what comes of Josh Sargent's career.
We're visiting with Eric Palmer Brown, and now you're back, EPB, with the team in Kansas City. And I'm just curious, how difficult is it to go from playing with the U-20s, playing with the, you know, with Tab Ramos as your coach in a certain system and a certain group of guys, to back to Kansas City, playing with a completely different group of guys and a different coach and a different system and all that? How difficult is transitioning from one to the other?
I mean, it's a little difficult, I think. You know, just being gone for so long away from Kansas City, no one just jumps into a squad kind of thing. So you have to work your way back into the squad. You have to get back to old training habits and old training routines. And, I mean, so from that aspect, it's different. But also, like you said, I mean, it's different players. It's a different level. I mean, most of us are professionals on the U-20 team, but we have some college players as well. So, but you can tell we're a younger group of guys, and we still have a lot to learn. So, you know, playing with guys like Bees and Ike, and, you know, like Dom and Benny from my team, it's just, you know, you see the maturity and their experience on the field. So that's something I'd say is different.
And how are your legs? I mean, you just traveled a lot, and you played a lot of minutes down there. How are you feeling physically getting back now?
Physically not too good, actually. But, you know, it's part of the game.
When you say not too good, are you dealing with some injuries, or are you just in terms of trying to get your legs back and all that?
Yeah, just minor stuff here and there. So just getting back to it.
So hitting the training and probably hitting the training room and all that stuff and just trying to get back into it. That's kind of the mode for the next few days, week or so?
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned your pooches. You have 2 dogs. Who's taking care of the dogs when you're out of town for a month and all that?
My mom did.
Yeah.
So just taking care of Lily and Tucker, my 2 Australian Shepherd pups. They were super excited to see me, but Tucker's not going to be so happy tomorrow when I have to take him in to get fixed.
Oh, but, no.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're awesome. They're outside just messing around right now in this nice weather we have.
Yeah, you're just going to have to be super nice to him for the next week or so, you know?
Yeah.
He's going to have his feelings hurt pretty bad, and physically he might be in some pain. You think your legs feel bad, man.
Exactly.
Well, hey, Eric, I really appreciate the time. Welcome back to Kansas City. Congratulations on representing the U-20s so well, and we're glad to have you back, man.
Thank you. I'll see you soon.
All right. That's Eric Palmer Brown, captain of the U-20s. Just got back from the U-20 World Cup, and we will take a break. Back after this to wrap things up on the Sporting Kansas City show here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Back to wrap things up on this edition of the Sporting Kansas City show here on your home for Sporting Kansas City Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Nate Bucati with you. Our thanks to Will Parchman for joining us on the show. And, of course, also Eric Palmer Brown and El Jefe Carter Augustine, as we have a lot to get to coming up from a schedule standpoint for both Sporting Kansas City, Swope Park Rangers, and the United States men's national team. Let me run all that stuff down for you again one more time so that you're ready for everything you need to know coming up for what will be a busy week. First things first, on Thursday night, a couple of nights from now, the United States men's national team play what I'll say is a must win. You got to make sure you take care of business at home against Trinidad and Tobago. That game is going to be on Thursday night at 7 o'clock Central Time. Then the United States men's national team will be in Mexico City at the Azteca on Sunday evening at 7:30 to take on the Mexican national team. That one, that's going to be a very tough one. But look, this team's prepared for the climate and the altitude and all of that, so we'll see how they fare. Meanwhile, for Sporting Kansas City, they put their undefeated home record on the line on Saturday night, 7 o'clock. Against the Montreal Impact. Of course, tickets are still available at sportingkc.com. Remember, Sporting Kansas City have won 6 matches in a row at home. They've got to continue to take care of their home field advantage if they want to remain atop the Western Conference standings. Taking on a Montreal Impact team, it's playing much better of late, but they are going to be missing some guys just like Sporting Kansas City are off on international duty. So get your tickets at sportingkc.com. If you can't get there, you can watch the game on Fox Sports Kansas City and the Fox Sports Go app, with the pregame coverage starting at 6:30, which, by the way, I'll let you know that there's going to be some special stuff on the pregame show that you're going to want to tune into as well. You can listen to the game live right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB with the game broadcast starting right after 7 o'clock. Then Sporting Kansas City will be taking on the Loons again. They will be taking on Minnesota United next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow night, at 7:30 in their first match of the U.S. Open Cup. So a rematch, obviously, of the 3-0 victory that Sporting got over Minnesota United this past weekend. But that one should feature a lot of different players because that's an early round U.S. Open Cup game, so should be a lot of fun. Tickets available for that one as well on next Wednesday night at sportingkc.com. So that's what's going for Sporting Kansas City coming up. I'll also remind everybody that Swope Park Rangers will be in action on Sunday at 4 o'clock at Swope Soccer Village. Swope Park Rangers taking on the Tulsa Roughnecks. That game will be at 4 o'clock, so a nice little doubleheader between Swope Park Rangers and then the U.S. men's national team taking on Mexico later that night. So that's your schedule coming up. A lot to get to. Hey, if you're a soccer fan, it's a lot of fun. So between Thursday night, U.S. men's national team, Saturday, Sporting Kansas City, Sunday, Swope Park Rangers and U.S. men's national team, and then next Wednesday, U.S. Open Cup action for Sporting Kansas City as well. So that'll wrap things up here on this edition of the Sporting Kansas City show. We thank again our guests, Carter Augustine, Will Parchman, and Eric Palmer Brown. We will see you Saturday night at Children's Mercy Park for Sporting Kansas City and the Montreal Impact.